Okay, you sound a little bit... Right. Can you talk for a second? Say words. Say the alphabet in right. Scottish.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good. Do you ever think about how if we're on calls like this, that like this is what the view of your computer is all the time, like while you're working? If your computer were animate, alive, had a soul, or whatever, like that it's just looking at you all the time, just looking down from this angle. This is what its view is of life.
This is why I've never been that concerned about like someone hacking into my webcam, because if all they get from it is just like the underside of my chin for the most part of the day, then good luck to them. They can have it.
Yeah, I was watching a bunch of those like scammers hacking, like those things on YouTube. Was I talking about this already? Where there's people who are like, you know, they call and they say like, oh, hello, this is the bank of whatever. What's a bank you got there? This is Barclays. We're trying to access your account. We're having an issue. There's someone's pretending to be you. We're just going to ask you a handful of questions to verify your identity. And then that way we can help out to stop this hacking from happening. And you go, oh my God. And then you tell them all the answers to the questions and what they're doing is actually just getting it from you. So there's this guy on YouTube. I can't remember his name. I'm going to pull it up. But what he does is he will scam the scammers. So he'll run a virtual machine on his computer. So it's like, and so he gives them access to his computer, but it's not actually his computer. Does this make sense so far?
Yeah.
So he's got an emulated computer, and then he gives them access to that. But then when they establish the connection to his computer to start messing with him, what he does is he is then able to access their computer on their end and start messing with their computer on their end. So he gets all of their personal information. They're like going through his files, trying to find personal stuff, but there's nothing there because it's just an emulated computer. And he's like pulling all the information from their computers, from the call center, like, or personal computers, figures out what their real names are, figures out like where they're located, like maybe bills and stuff. And he'll submit the information to the UK police, I believe, as well as the local police, which is the ones I watch were largely in like Bangladesh and a couple of provinces in India, which I can't recall. It's pretty entertaining because it's just watching him just go through the stuff and then messing with their stuff on their end. So they're trying to do things. They don't understand why it's happening. Because the people that are set, like, you think that all these people who are scamming you and like, what are all these like hackers, as they say, which is not a great term to use because it's not specific enough, but you think that they're like super high tech people, but really they're just like lowly paid people who are following a specific script instead of applications to do stuff. And so they get very confused and start freaking out. But the best ones is because he has that access to the computer, he just keeps it going and then watches them call other people. Because they're calling through like a voice over IP thing. And then so like it'll be like 5-10 minutes in and they're like, okay, we're just gonna have to give you our you just let me know what the passcode is. It's gonna be texted to you. And then he like mutes or turns off the scamming people and jumps in. He's like, hello, my name is Michael. I'm here just to let you know. You don't know me, but these people are trying to scam you. If you just stay on the line, I will call you back in 10 minutes. Just don't give them any information. They don't know that I'm here right now. I will call you back. And they're like, oh, okay. And then hangs up and then they go back and do it. It's just like a weird, interesting way for someone to spend their time. But then he posts all these things on YouTube and it's pretty entertaining. It's a good service. But wouldn't it be weird if you were on the phone with somebody? Like, if you have already bought in, so you bought in and then you're like, oh, I'm speaking to Barclays Bank. And then suddenly someone is just like, this is Steven. Hello. This is not Barclays Bank. Do not give me information. I'll explain later. It's like a weird version of Batman dropping from the down but in the
do
alley.
Do you trust Steven in that situation? Or are you like, he is hacking Barclays Bank?
I think you have to trust him in that situation because what else are you going to do?
Put
like
the phone down.
Like it's yeah, I guess you could, like, if you call back and then you're just, like, if you're saying don't give any information and then Steven calls back and he's like, I don't want any of your information. This is the stuff I already know about you. This is what they stole from you. You need to do this, this, and that. And then I wonder if he's like, this is my YouTube channel. Find me on YouTube, if that's helpful. Does that help?
Well, it depends who you're talking to. If you're talking to someone who's like 60 something, 70 something on the phone, and you're like, hey, would you check out my YouTube channel as well? Then you've got to explain all that. Yeah, like and subscribe, leave a comment down below. Subscribe to my Patreon.
That's all. I was just trying to let that sit there for a minute so that people could like and subscribe to our Patreon, which doesn't exist.
It should do for like a minimum of $7.99 a month.
But then we have to like give them extra stuff. Like we'd have to actually, one of the Patreon things, did we talk about this levels of yen at one point at the beginning?
Yeah, we did.
At the pandemic. But one of them we could just leave on your camera and people could get to see what it looks like to be on the other side of your camera all the time.
More than happy to have people watch and see my entire day. For $7.99 a month.
What about your lovely lady friend? Is she going to be pleased with the little green dot turned on at the top of your MacBook all the time?
She doesn't need to know.
Okay.
You get an insight into from my computer, all you can see is me playing on the PlayStation, playing Call of Duty every night.
I don't like that Call of Duty that much. It's just maybe because I'm garbage at it.
Could be. I'm very tired today. I walked 20 kilometers yesterday.
That's not a thing. I think when you get to that point, you call it a hike. That's what people do. You know, people are like, oh, I've gone for a hike. And you're like, oh, where did you go? They're like, oh, you know, through the park, came back. And you're like, so you were walking? Like, it was a hike. Because the only difference between hike and walk is either intensity in your brain or location.
Okay, well, this was a hike. It was a walk around an entire lock. And it was 20 kilometers, and it took about 6 hours, and so I'm very tired. I also drank quite a bit last night, so I'm a bit hungover as well.
Was it because you were like, well, I walked 20 kilometers so I can drink these extra beers, because that's how calories work?
I mean, I applied that to the amount of food that I ate once I got home.
Mm-hmm. Are we turning into a teenage eating disorder people? We were like, well, I don't know how much we can eat. I walked 20 kilometers today. I can have 4 wafers and a little bit of a Jaffa cake.
I've definitely had more than 4 wafers today.
About 2 pieces. You're going to walk.
So yeah, we went on a hike yesterday for 20 kilometers, and it was lovely. It was the first time that we've really got out into nature properly. And yeah.
Ever?
Not ever, I don't think. But for a while, if it felt like a while. And both me and Claire have been quite busy with work, so we're like, we'll get out. We drove about an hour outside of Glasgow, and then just walked around this massive lock, which
did
was
bring the little dog.
We brought the little dog, and
did he walk the whole 20 kilometers?
He walked the whole 20 kilometers. I'm not sure how much he enjoyed it.
When did he start giving off signals that he was like, okay, I'm done now though?
There was a point when a car drove past us on the trail with a dog in the back, and Mulder was looking at the dog in the back of the car and then looking at us, and you could see that he was going, I want to be that dog right now. And so I think it was like about halfway around. There was one point where I stopped to tie my laces and he just sat there and cried. So I feel like he had given up about an hour, but then he would have these like bursts of energy and like run ahead and run into the water and stuff, and so we weren't entirely sure. But when we got home, he was just passed out and has continued to be all today. So I think he's pretty exhausted as a way, but
he also had a few drinks.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was out last night with some friends, so he really paid for this morning. But he's sleeping it off now. But
that's good.
But yeah, I felt a great sense of achievement from that. It's kind of given me a bit of a push to kind of be outdoors a little bit more, because work's kind of picked up, and I know before we get locked down again, it'd be quite nice to get some hikes in, a long walk.
Yeah, we've been walking a lot around, just like starting from our home and then just walking. The other day we did like 10 or 15 kilometers or something just around the city, which is fun, but it's different than, like, as you say, a hike. I didn't go for a hike. I went for a long walk. But yeah, you're inspiring me to do that. I think that would be a great way to spend my day today, except for that it's thunderstorming all day. And so, well, here's the thing. I can go in the rain. I'm not going to melt.
Hey, you'll be fine in the rain.
I'll be fine. I'm actually in my rain boots. I'm packing up right now. You can hear the box maybe here. It's been on my list for a while, but these are my brain boots, are my beam boots because I'm a hipster. I'm getting them resold again. So I had them resold right when I left England because I brought them to England. I had them for a number of years. And I sent them from Clapham, the post office. I think that's what you call it there. The post office, and it, all the way to Maine and the States. And I think it's in Maine, to the L.L. Bean people. And then they resold them. They took my uppers, my leather upper bits, and they removed them from the rubber. And then they put new rubber on and gave me new laces and polished up the leather really nicely.
Do you have to pay for the... Do they send you a box to send them back in?
I pay for the shipping to get there. And then I put a, it's actually very interesting because I was trying to find out online how to do it because I knew you could do it. So when I was in London, it was 2016, I was trying to figure out how to do it. And I was like, where is it online? Blah, blah, blah. And I ended up just going on like their little chat thing. And I was like, hey, I'm trying to get my bean boots resold. Do you do that? And they're like, yeah, for sure. Just put them in a box. In the box, I think they emailed me this as well with the instructions, but in the box, you just put a piece of paper with your name and address. And I think even phone number or email address, either any of those things. Just on a piece of paper in the box with the boots, mail it to them, to the repairs department. They open it up, they go, okay. And then they send you an email and they say, hey, give us a call and we'll process your credit card. We got your boots here. It's $43. And then they resole them or they re-rubber them because it's like a huge chunk of rubber on the bottom. It's not just the sole. And then they mail them back to you.
That's cool. I'm getting my Red Wings done.
Yeah, it's great. I think about the Red Wings. I didn't buy a lot.
Man, they're such great. Not a lot, I won a competition the other day. I got a letter from Halifax, my bank, and it said, congratulations, you have been gifted £100 because you've been drawn in a prize. And I thought that was a scam. I was ready to eat scams, but I checked my bank account and £100 appeared in. So that is paying for Red Wings. Yeah.
What?
No idea, my friend. I haven't looked into it too much, but £100 is sitting in my bank and... I'm more than happy to spend it on some Red Wings. Been resold.
I feel like those are things that I see often. Like, hey, just take this survey, be entered for an Amazon card. Hey, take this thing. Oh, just by using your Halifax card, you'll be eligible to win a $100 giveaway. And I just didn't. I never really think about who's actually receiving those things. Like, I imagine people must be receiving them.
Yeah, definitely. I remember my friend entered a competition to, you had to comment your dream holiday in emojis. And she did it on an Instagram story and then won a trip to, forgotten the name of the place, but it was Sri Lanka. It was all expenses paid to Sri Lanka in a beautiful hotel. And all she had to do when she was there was post some pictures on Instagram.
That's too much for me. Was the dream holiday that she described actually going to Sri Lanka, though? Like, is she able to put like a Sri Lankan flag?
No, there was no Sri Lankan flag in it. There was no Sri Lankan food. There was nothing to do with Sri Lanka, in fact. It was more like sun emoji, wave emoji, aubergine emoji, peach emoji.
Is that a sexual thing?
It means we're boning in the sun and the sea.
And that's what she did? Or are you just guessing for comedy?
I'm not guessing for comedy. I mean, that's what she posted with a few other emojis. How else can you interpret the aubergine emoji? I don't think she was planning on just going to Sri Lanka and eating a bunch of aubergines and peaches.
I'm curious if that's a thing where they didn't know what it was and they're just like, oh, she's looking forward to, you know, the local cuisine. Or if it's a thing where in the England and the Britain, that people's sense of humor is very different and they will put up with you putting a sex joke in an emoji. Sex joke in an emoji contest, and actually think that is the winning prize, and that's what they're celebrating.
Hey, well, it worked, and she went along and had a great time. So it shows sometimes just put some emojis in, and then you can win a 2-week holiday.
That's a long holiday,
mate. Tell me about it. And it was free, and it was all paid for. A whole
How many pictures do I have to take and post to Instagram, and do I have to tag people in them?
One per day. Tag some people. Tag Lauren.
If you just didn't do it, would they charge you?
Enjoying cocktails at the beach here in Sri Lanka. Aubergine emoji. Peach emoji. Because you've had an aubergine cocktail and a peach cocktail. And
Aubergine cocktail sounds delicious.
It does, right?
Eggplant cocktail sounds strange.
Hey.
Same thing.
Same thing. Different. Yeah, different. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to an eggplant cocktail. That is too much.
Do you know that cocktails were called cocktails because originally they were drinks that you're supposed to have first thing in the morning? Like the rooster's tail? That's my understanding.
I feel like that's supposed to start your day. I feel like someone's made this up.
Well, if someone's made everything up, that's how like language and culture exists. I feel like someone
is, as they say, pulling your leg.
Are they scamming me?
I think you've been scammed into drinking cocktails on a morning. It also sounds like a justification from an alcoholic.
Oh, you know, originally, these are just good ways to start the day. From the rooster. So you wake up bright and early, getting your day going, and your functional alcoholism begins with a delicious old-fashioned.
Exactly.
That makes sense to me.
Hey, it makes sense to me as well, Joshy boy.
I was very curious today. I was watching The Simpsons. I've been watching them quite frequently recently because it's on the Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to, as I'm sure that we have discussed, that I was sucked into the news world because the world was ending a bunch. And I realized that I needed to stop. So I just stopped. And then YouTube turned into news world because I was watching YouTube for escapism. But then it slowly is like, hey, did you know in Canada this is happening? And I'm like, oh, that's fine. They're like, hey, did you know? Here's a compelling YouTube title to pull you right in. Clickbait, I think we call it. And then I click it. And then I'm in there for like an hour, just like, what's happening? I need to watch more to understand what's going on. And only upon reflection this week, about a week and a half, 2 weeks after really consciously stopping myself from engaging in the YouTube and the news tube, did I realize that I think part of me was just waiting for it to end, like a film. Or a television show where it just wraps and it goes, and that's and concluded here. And here's the news. I know you're really concerned about the state of the world, and concluded. So don't worry. Come back next week. We'll start off a new whole story and narrative, and you can engage with it if you want or not. But they just kind of bleed one to the other. It's like it never ends. So I started watching The Simpsons because it's like comfort food.
Absolutely.
And still very funny. And it's actually, I'm getting more of the jokes now that I didn't get when I was younger. For example, today, Abe Simpson was writing, was receiving checks for writing itchy and scratchy cartoons. And then Lisa and Bart were actually writing the cartoons. And they said, Grandpa, weren't you curious as to why you're getting a check for doing nothing? And he said, I thought the Democrats were back in power, which I didn't realize was a funny joke as a child, but it's a funny joke as an adult person. Anywho, I can talk more about the news thing, but what I wanted to mention is that as I was watching the beginning of The Simpsons, I thought to myself, how much of my life has just been watching the introduction to The Simpsons? Boop, 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 boop. Because it's a minute 20 long.
So is there now, because I know it's happened a lot with like Netflix and stuff, that like when the titles come up, it gives you the skip intro.
Yeah, it does.
So I can skip intro. Simpsons, you were rewarded with the bit when they jump on the couch at the end. That would differ.
Yeah, the couch gag. Yeah, rewarded with the couch gag. So what I remember when I was a kid, they would sometimes just cut. They'd just be like, The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And then it would just show him pulling to the driveway mm-hmm. to do the couch gag. But I've definitely had some time watching the full thing, like with the, you know, the little piece of uranium or whatever, as it pops down, and then they put it through the grocery
scanner, thing. And then Bart's skating, and then it flies out of the mm-hmm. bag, and
yeah, exactly. So I've definitely watched that enough to even note. I'm pretty sure that Bart is wearing like a blue shirt at some point in that, and he's just not usually wearing a blue shirt. Am I wrong?
You could be. We'll get told. Okay, cool. In an email.
We'll get told. Do you remember the Bart Simpson dolls and figurines where he's wearing a blue shirt?
I wasn't as much into The Simpsons as you.
Anyway, so here's my question is, how much time have I spent watching the intro to The Simpsons? Because I used to watch it. It's a minute 20. Maybe it's not always watching the full thing. But I would watch The Simpsons on average twice a day, I think. Mm-hmm. 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock. Same. There was episodes on. So I did that for, let's say, I'm going to call it 5 to 6 years. I'm going to guess that much.
That much. So if you're watching it 5 days a week, that's 10 minutes per week. Just over yeah, what, 2:40 per day.
Yeah, and let's cut some chunks of summer out, maybe. So how many, let's call it 40 weeks a year or something. I don't know. Maybe that's not, maybe more 50.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just do some fun math. This is what we do on the show, fun math. Okay, I'm going to say it's not, I'm going to say the full thing I'm watching 40 times, 40 days times. So 40 weeks times 5 days a week.
There's 40 weeks?
Time. I'm saying it's 52 weeks in a year, but I'm not watching it every week, right? Like, I mean, maybe
what, you're taking summer 12 weeks off from the Simpsons.
Taking 12 weeks off, yeah. Yeah, taking 12 weeks off.
Okay, so this is factoring your 12-week vacation from the Simpsons because you had too much else going on.
Yeah. So we got 40 weeks, 5 times a week, twice a day. So 40 times 5 times 2. And then it's a minute 20. So that's 1 1/3, roughly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So apparently it's 520 minutes a year.
Okay.
So 520 minutes per year is into hours is 8.6 hours. So eight hours 40 minutes of the Simpsons per year. Does that make sense?
I think that's fine.
Doesn't that sound like a lot though?
I don't know. I think if you were to kind of, the fact that you are rewarded each episode with a gag mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. start feels like that 1:20 is worth it.
But if I just said to you, I did a whole working day and plus a little bit of overtime, you just sat there once a year going, boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, but I feel like you could put that with like the amount of time you spend washing your hair or brushing your teeth or staring into space or eating cereal or. Because I've done it before when I looked at my stats on Rocket League, and I have spent over 16 days straight playing Rocket League.
Which, it's like Dota when I was playing Dota.
Yeah, when you look back on my life and you go like, when I'm on my deathbed and someone asks me what my regrets are, it probably will be spending those 16 full days of my life then Rocket League. But also, at the same time, what else are you going to do? I don't know.
You were like, oh, I could learn the Portuguese in that amount of time.
I could learn Portuguese.
But did you drop everything on the floor? Because it's definitely, I can't stop that. I don't know what happened.
There we go. I knocked the mic.
Is this a lap desk?
Mate, this is a lap desk with 6 books stacked on top of each other to hold the microphone. We are in peak podcast quality at the moment.
It's pretty good.
I've been doing it for about 2.5 years or something like that, and
65-66 episodes here.
Hey man, I've been too busy playing Rocket League and watching The Simpsons to buy a proper microphone, okay?
I've only been asking you since we started to buy a proper microphone.
I mean, I've got a proper microphone, it's just I don't know how to use it. So, but let's not get into arguing, Josh. Until we are sent some equipment, then I can't be held responsible for the quality on my end. We need to speak to our editor and make sure that they're mixing the audio properly. That's where I'm.
Yeah, I'll let him know.
Cool. Let him know and speak to that intern because I haven't seen her in the best part of 4 weeks. Our fan mail is building up.
Bet you if we posted something somewhere, there's a place to post this that someone would legit want to be there for the experience.
So again,
and then I'd feel guilty. Like if we posted an intern position, do you think like to get rid of this current intern that's here? I think that someone like would you feel guilty running an intern to be like they'd be like, wow, you have like a real show and I'm a part of it. I'd be like, listen. Have you seen The Simpsons?
Would you mind watching 8 hours of intros and letting me know how that feels in the space of a day? To be honest, I've done worse stuff as an intern. Oh, I've been unpaid.
I've never been an unpaid intern, so I don't know what it's about.
Well, it's not that great, Josh, okay? It's pretty demoralizing, so. But it depends for the people. It was only demoralizing because of the tasks that I was asked to do and the people that I was asked to work for. I feel like if you're asked to work for us two and do tasks like watch Simpsons intros, mm-hmm. I think you'd be a pretty happy person to be unpaid for that.
Okay, well, open door policy, is that what we say?
If you our intern needs to be on furlough until October, and then
Did you also spend like 2 months pretending you knew what furlough meant and then finally look it up and go, oh?
I think I don't really know what furlough means because it doesn't affect me. So I feel like I'm in a constant state of being furloughed because my industry's gone to shit and I don't know where I am in life. So, you know, I'm not too concerned. But I hope the country's fine. I hope your country's fine. I'm sure we'll all be okay, Josh. I'm sure everything will
be. Yeah, probably won't die from lack of fur. With the loafer levels.
Yeah, absolutely. Those loafer levels.
Loafer? The low levels of fur. Also loafer levels. That's fine, too.
No, the loafer levels have definitely dropped across both mine and your country.
I had loafers, penny loafers. I'd wear them all the time, and then I wore them out in England because I didn't rest them. You know, you're supposed to rest shoes.
Nope.
So you shouldn't wear the same shoes every day. You should put some cedar shoe trees in there to keep the shape and to pull the moisture out of them, but I just wore them every day in England because I was teaching and blah, blah, blah. I've just wrecked them. I wrecked the shoes. I wore all the way through them and I didn't resole them. The other ones I resold once before anyway, but then I was going to buy new penny loafers because I love them, but then I don't have any, like, I almost never wear clothes that are like nice people clothes anymore because my job doesn't require it. And then unlike in like London, where if you're just like throwing on a nice set of clothing and walking out into the world, it's fine. You can go just like to a restaurant, go to a pub, like whatever. And if you're wearing like a, as you might say, a smart suit, it's fine. People are just like, okay, that person's just wearing that. It's just, you stand out so much in the Canada.
Do you?
People.
Actually, yeah, Toronto's not that great dressed city.
We're like the most popular city. So like, where's it going to,
yeah,
it's going to happen.
Yeah. People don't dress like
Montreal. Right. Yeah. It's such a strange thing. I remember getting on the tube after first moving to London and being like, oh my God, everyone here is dressed so well and like impeccably. And it's also interesting because there's like a fashion thing specifically for like women in jobs in London. I can't speak to all of England, but in London where they're like, I'm going to wear something that is like, Laura was saying the other day, it's like feminine, but definitely like appropriate and powerful. Like, no, yeah, I'm wearing a skirt, but it's definitely not because I'm like a submissive person anyway. Whereas here, it's like if you want to show that you're a management-y person with some power, I still think you don't dress in a way that is like fashionable and attractive, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Generally, this is my you know, sense.
Okay.
You have no opinion on the matter, woman. Yeah, that's fair.
I don't have an opinion, but also like I've worked from home for the last 8 years. I have an office now, but a studio space, and I don't think the people are reflective of your typical workplace environment. We have no
uniform. I'm curious if I have two thoughts about this. Well, two questions, lots of questions.
Please ask them all.
You went back to the office thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, who's there? Is everyone there? Are you guys all like breathing in each other's mouths or what's going on?
Yeah, so I went back to the studio space and quite a few people give up their desk and aren't there anymore, but the rest of us are all just breathing in each other's mouths. We have like a mouth breathing meeting around, it's usually about 12:30. We're all just breathing into each other's mouths for like, it's a good 20 minutes by the time we've breathe in everyone's mouth. But no, we all have like designated spaces in there anyway, and there's no one who's sitting near me at the moment because I've given up their desks. But you have to wear a mask when you're like passing through like to the bathroom or the kitchen and stuff. And
but not in the room with all the people that you're in.
But we're in like a huge open space. Like I am like at least like 50 feet away from the next person at the moment. There's no one near me.
And are you going to rent out those desks near you to ensure that,
that no one comes near me?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, mate, I'm at the point now where I'm like, if I get it, I get it.
If you get the desk?
If I get the desk, if I get the Roni. COVID, if I get the Rona, then like...
Get the Roni. Oh,
like, so yeah, I feel like the cases are so low in Scotland that we should be okay. And my studio is following the government guidelines, and it's fine at the moment to have the office space back open. So I'm going to go in. If that changes, I won't go in. So
that's fair. Yeah, I'm not here to judge. I'm just
no. Even if you were, it wouldn't make a difference to me going in. But no, I felt a bit weird about going in. Definitely, like, it does feel strange, like, making a cup of tea in there. Like, well, there used to be a big communal table where everyone would have lunch. That's gone. And so it feels like, it feels sadder as a space.
Are there more or fewer forks?
No forks.
No forks.
Forks have been removed, my friend. The bowls have been removed. The plates, also gone. You have to bring in your plates and bowls. So I'm essentially running my own kitchen out of my studio space at the moment.
Yeah, it's like you're kind of bringing your own. It's like working from home, but not. So it's like none of the advantages of having a shared space, but all of the frustrations, the commitments to having a home space.
Like, I feel like because my space is like open, so you can see into it. It's basically just blocked out by lines on the floor. I feel like, in my space now, I'm in like a performance art piece where it's me just pretending to live in a space, making a cup of tea or hanging up my coat on the coat rail now rather than the communal one. And so I've got this like miniature living room set up, but it's kind of cozy, man. And like, it kind of means that I'm leaving the house most days, and like, I'm going down 3 times a week. My other 2 days now, I'm like designating as proper days off. So, and
for Rocket League.
No, I'll tell you what I'm doing, my friend. I'm watching a lot of Frasier.
Is Frasier your Simpsons? Is that what's going on?
Frasier is 100% my Simpsons. Oh, it's the most comforting, delightful piece of television you can ever have in your life. Like, I find it so comforting, and I'm so lucky that I have been alive during the point that Frasier existed.
Frasier was the show in between my two Simpsons episodes. So the only reason I ever watched Frasier is because at 5 o'clock on CBC, they played The Simpsons. And then at 5:30 on CFMT, aka Omni One, they played Frasier. And then I would watch that because I was waiting for the 6 o'clock showing of The Simpsons on the same channel on CFMT.
Also,
so I'd only ever watched it
You are rewarded as you are with The Simpsons. And the credit sequence of what will happen at the skyline. Like, sometimes there'll be a plane that goes over, or there's balloons, or a UFO, or does it light up? It doesn't light up. Oh, it's a blackout.
I don't remember this, but now that you're talking about it, it seems to be somewhat familiar. I just know that the Blues are calling with tossed salad and scrambled eggs. I believe that's all I can recall.
That's all you need to recall. That's a mantra for life.
Do you ever eat tossed salad with scrambled eggs? Like, I'm trying to think. Like, I feel like if I have a salad, I'll have a hard-boiled egg.
I can't remember if I mentioned, but I'm actually vegan.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I don't eat eggs. Huh. Yeah, I don't eat.
What if they come in those cartons, like the little egg white cartons? Does that count? Because you're not actually eating a chicken egg. Because
that's a carton. Well, today I got lunch, and it's a cafe that I usually go to. It's just reopened this week. And I usually get the same thing there. And he brought it out, and he was like, shit, I forgot you're vegan. I put eggs on it. And it was part of me where I was just like, should I just go along with it? Because I don't want to waste food.
I don't want to waste food. That's the whole point of
being
vegan.
Probably going to go in the bin. Should I have it? But then I thought, you know what? I want to get that smugness from sending it back.
Mm-hmm. And the superpowers from being a vegan.
I was like, I don't know if you remember, but I'm actually vegan, so you're going to have to take that away from me because I'm about to vomit at you. Handing me chicken periods.
Chicken periods that come out of the chicken's one hole.
Absolutely. And I don't know, Joshy boy, but one day I'll get some chicks, hens of my own, and have some eggs.
Wait, would you be open to it if you had your own chickens?
Absolutely.
So it's just that you don't trust that people are doing the chickens right.
Yeah, I mean, because they're going to lay eggs anyway, and they don't do anything with them, so...
No, it's more complicated because you have to keep a cow.
Why am I going to keep a cow in Glasgow? There's no room to fit a cow in my flat.
You've already moved from London to Glasgow, and I think that the move from you to country, you to like it's not as far off as you might think in your brain. You're like, nah, I'm not going to live in a small town in the Highlands, and then you're going to get yourself a hairy cow.
Hey, man.
Hairy Highlands cows.
I don't want to
go on 20-kilometer hikes. You hire an intern for that.
that's what we should do.
I think
do.
We're coming around that way. I think that the kids these days are going to be like, I don't want to intern in some bank or ad agency. I really want to intern on a farm. You can get people to work for you. It's called woofing. Have you heard of woofing?
I have heard of woofing. I've met some woofers before.
Yeah. Seems like, seems just, you know, something you could run as a, you could call it woof woof farm.
That'd be good, actually, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be up for that. That'd be great. Let's do that. I'll get a cow.
Okay.
I'll get a pig. But pigs don't really provide anything except bacon, but I don't want to eat a pig. But my chickens. Now they would help me out. I'd befriend the chickens and eat their eggs.
People can't tell that you're looking after the sky, really considering this and how it would work. And I'm curious if your experience with Stardew Valley. I came across a photo just earlier today of your picture of Abby, your wife, talking to you.
From Stardew Valley. Not wife. I think we just argued all the time.
And I'm wondering, do you think that the skill set that you developed in Stardew Valley would help you in your woof woof farm?
I feel absolutely that. Like, I think sometimes, like in life, like the best way to kind of learn something is to just throw yourself in it. And I feel like that's how it was with my farm in Stardew Valley, with my horse Oatmeal. And the thing is, like, that farm life, it just became too stressful. You had like the corporations moving in and stuff like that, and like, yeah, my relationship at the time was not going too well. It was a woman in the village as well who was definitely into me, and it just became a bit too complicated and very small town mentality. But I think going forward, I think those skills are definitely transferable. And mm-hmm. also, if I need to go mining for geodes, then I could do that and sell them at the local fair.
Yeah, like, I'm sure you've heard the argument that people make about, like, as you mentioned, Call of Duty or other first-person shooter games, that what they're doing is they're just trying to train our youth to be, you know, soldiers and people
mindless shooting killers. Things.
Mindless killers, just desensitized to violence so that we can send them off to war, etc., and blah, blah, blah. But no one's like, hey, this Stardew Valley, it's really just trying to teach people to get some skills to live off the land and to inherit property from their grandfather.
Well, yeah, because that's it. You just inherit the property and then you move out of the city. And then you have to start this farm. So, but I don't know. I kind of felt like I didn't have much choice in leaving the city on that game. I was kind of drawn in and I inherited this. It's like, who's this that I wanted to leave the city?
Yeah, there was no choice at the beginning that was like, stay in your job. Make new friends. Find a hobby.
It was a lot to take on, to be honest, at the time. And this was like a year and a half where I had to give it up in the end. Because, well, part of the reason was that they introduced multiplayer and I started seeing how good my other friends' farms were. And I became very competitive and also very jealous of them. And
That's how farming works. That's how the relaxed pastoral life lives. It's just
a constant state of competition. Mm-hmm. And I haven't got time for that.
Who does have time for that,
my friend, is to listen to live recordings of Neilio.
I would like to talk about this. I have one final Stardew Valley question, though.
Please, let's cycle back to Stardew Valley.
We'll cycle back. The last question is, if you were to be in the situation where you got a letter from your grandfather, who I don't know is alive.
He's dead, but thanks for reminding me.
Okay, you're welcome. Maybe it got lost in the post.
Right.
It's just been bopping around, and suddenly they've had a lot of time recently with the pandemic to really sort through all the old mail. You know, like, you know how, like, you've probably been decluttering and looking at your space at home. They've been doing the same thing at the post office, and they found this letter that was addressed to you, and it was like, hey, by the way, get out of the grind, get out of the lightning and thunder, to get out of it, would you take the Stardew Valley farm that was gifted to you right now?
Where would you really
put your life and go there? Wherever you'd like. Scotland.
Okay.
Outside of Glasgow. Is farmland outside of Glasgow. The farm is good quality. You still do have rocks you have to smash at some point when you get there.
I don't know, because I feel like the idea in my head is far more romanticized than the actual day-to-day reality of it.
Yeah, that's most things.
Yeah, I think I'd probably like to just spend a weekend there and just have someone make me breakfast. And then I get to pet the cows and the goats.
That's good. I mean, here's the thing. I think that's a good thing to know about yourself, because I imagine there's a lot of people who are like, I just want to own a farm. I just want to get there. And then they buy the farm, they get there, realize that that's not what they were trying to find.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I have figured that out in my life. I've just been like, yeah, I don't need that farm in life. I've had enough of that with my Nintendo. And that's why I've gone back to Call of Duty, just these like quick rewards, 20-minute long games. I don't have time to be digging up and plowing earth and selling stuff at the local fair. I hate local fairs. Too stressful.
Yeah, it seems like it takes all of the convenience out of shopping and adds more socializing, which you don't care for.
No, I'm quite happy with my little life at the moment.
That's right. And is part of it because of the fact that you get to sit there listening to a recorded version of a Neil Young tour from the 70s?
That is part of the reason why, my friend. So, sorry. I've managed to minimize.
Close all your notes?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be professional here.
I mean, we are not kidding.
You know what I like about this album, at least on my version of it that I have on my telephone here, is that it's a live album, but every single track next to it, it says, like, track one, Sugar Mountain, and then in parentheses it says live, followed by I Am a Child, in parentheses, live. Just to let you know that...
Just to remind you that what you're listening to, in case you forget, but is that because you go, oh my god, this studio recording is so good.
Yeah, and how did they get the thunderstorm in it?
Just so you know, this is live. Hey guys, I don't know if you've forgotten from the last 3 minutes, this also is live.
It's also live. Like, subscribe, leave a comment below.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we are listening to the 1978 Rust, Live Rust. Rust? Live Rust? Rust Live.
Live Rust, because we listened to Rust Never Sleeps, which is a combination live album and also real album.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? So Live Rust was one of the ones I listened to a bunch when I was younger. I suggested it because we ran out of Porch Sessions.
No, we did run out of Porch Sessions. He hasn't recorded any Porch Sessions.
Oh, we ran out of new ones to use. Yeah.
We're up to date. We're
up to date. And people should know that we will, as soon as he puts another session out, we will be all over it. Because if we don't watch it immediately, it'll disappear into the weird Neil Young archive website, which makes zero sense. And in some ways, impresses me. Because it's like a website that was made by someone who doesn't use websites. Like, the fact that it's a fake newspaper and there's articles, which I think are actually being written by people and put onto that newspaper thing there. And there's links and they're embedded and there's a Vimeo video, but you can't find the original of it. It's just, it's the website does not work well. I think you have an Android phone as well. I don't know if you have the app where you open it to watch stuff, mm-hmm. and it doesn't actually work. So, like, have you ever changed the portrait from, like, or changed the, what's it called, rotation from portrait to landscape to watch the video, it'll stop the video and restart it all the way from the beginning again. You can't actually close the app. The only way to close the app is to touch it and force it closed.
Yeah, because it just lurks in the background, and I'm not very comfortable with it just lurking in the background. It's a really frustrating process. And like how we were saying about, like, oh, I wonder how long we've spent watching The Simpsons intro or something like that. It's like, I wonder how much time, once we finish this, of my life I will have spent trying to navigate through that labyrinth of his website. It's one of the most frustrating processes. And it just makes you go, you know what? I don't even want to listen to it. But we do.
But we do.
To that service.
So I suggested this as a throwback to listen to, because I think that because of the times and because Neil had been sharing so many of these old gems in his sessions, his porch sessions, his fireside sessions, his barnyard sessions, that you would enjoy some classic Neil. So I'm curious about what your take is on it, because I have now, having listened to it again for the first time in maybe a decade, I have some thoughts on it, but I'd like for you to start.
Okay, so we're back in 78. He's with Crazy Horse. Most of this is recorded at a place called the Cow Palace, which is in San Francisco. He's 33 at the time when he's doing this.
No.
Yeah.
It's like us.
Mate, exactly. We are the same age as Neil Young. And it's quite interesting to see the parallels in careers between me, you, and him at this point. Mm-hmm. Oh, I feel like we're on a very even keel and we've experienced very similar things. And so it's quite fitting that we have decided to do this right now. But in terms of a live album, it's really good. Like, all these songs I'm pretty familiar with. And off the bat, one of my first, actually not, I'll get to the criticisms later on. So it's like a good split between us. It's like the first, what was it? first five songs, which are like Sugar Mountain, I Am a Child, Comes a Time, After Gold Rush, Hey, My My, Hey Hey, are all acoustic. It's just Neil on his own at this venue, and he sounds great. You can hear the crowd in the background who crop up through out, and then the rest of it is just bashed through with Crazy Horse behind him, who sound great. He sounds solid, his voice sounds amazing, and it is. I was listening to this, I drove over to a friend's today, it's about an hour round trip, and I listened to it again today, and I was like, he is incredible, and there's so many songs on this that are so well done. But my criticism is that this, as a live album, does not compare to World at all, which came in 91, 92, and the versions of these songs that, like, I love Cinnamon Girl, I love Like a Hurricane, but they are nowhere near as good and don't sound as good as the World record.
So I was thinking about this too, and I was thinking about it because I know how strongly you feel about World. And I was, I don't know if you can tell, I've got a rainstorm here in the background in tribute to the Live Rust album, where there is a rainstorm thunderstorm, which I'm not sure if it's real or not. Do you know?
I do, but it also feels like we are, you've got one of those like YouTube compilation videos where it's like 19 hours of relaxing rain sound.
I remember trying to fall asleep at like 4:30 in the morning because there was a long time where I wasn't sleeping properly. I was just staying up all night, and I was like, you know, it'll help me, rain sound. So I was like trying to download, it's like 2005 or 2006, and I'm trying to download these rain sounds onto my computer on my, 2005 PowerBook laptop. And this is like before YouTube is really a thing, where you could just like go onto YouTube type and like rain sounds, and it would play like 96 hours of rain sounds. And so I'd like had to find some weird website that had uploaded it and put in an email address and blah, 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 and download this thing. And it was just like, I got so much spam, and it took forever to download this like 2 gigabyte file of rain sounds. So I'm spending, 40 minutes trying to figure out a way to get rain sounds to play in my room so I'll fall asleep. And I put it on, it was just like the worst rain sound things, where they throw like a pan flute on top of it, and the thunder that keeps playing is obviously the same clip of thunder just over and over repeated. It's so fake. Anyway, it's the calming noises for you. With this album, I don't know what I was talking about, because I started talking about rain. Specifically,
you were talking about my friend, because I will help you out. You were talking about my appreciation for Weld.
Oh yeah, so 13 years later, I think ish, whatever, he comes out with Weld, and so I'm curious about the mixing and whether how much of it is the mix on the Live Rust version that is not as good as the mix on the Weld version, because we know that he did a lot of studio mixing and stuff on Weld, including with that guy who's not Beck, Thurston Moore, right? But didn't he help him
from
with it?
Sonic Youth.
Yeah. So I'm curious how much of it was the mixing on Weld and how much was the performance. Do you have a sense or thoughts on that?
I felt like it was the performance, but like, yeah, the mix of it definitely sounds higher quality in Weld, but I don't know, like, it might be the mix, but, like, it does just sound like a fuller kind of sound. I guess it could be, yeah, it does sound more like a studio kind of album, Weld does, than this one.
Yeah, like, this one feels like it was...
This definitely feels live, and as you are reminded, every track that's still live. But, yeah, it's not to take away from the performances. I think it's just... Sugar Mountain sounds amazing in this. And like I think all those ones like Sugar Mountain, Comes a Time, The Needle and the Damage Done, Lot of Love and stuff, like all sound great. I think it might just be that those songs like Cinnamon Girl and Hurricane and that I do just prefer the versions of them on Weld. But
Cinnamon Girl is an interesting version here. Like I was thinking about it and you always talk about the Cinnamon Girl opening as the chords being super powerful and just like really landing perfectly and just putting you into the right zone. And I feel like that the chords don't land super perfectly at the beginning of the song. Sets a different tone for it. And I actually feel like Cinnamon Girl, which is usually super strong, is one of the weaker songs on this album.
Yeah. Like my favorite. It's one of my favorite songs by him, which it doesn't translate. Like, if this was the only version I'd heard of it, I don't think it's a standout version. And like Hurricane Sound, like the opening kind of riff to it, I think is powerful on any version just because everything else kind of cuts out around that like first little bit of guitar, but once the drums kick in on this, the drums kind of sound flat and it could be like a mixing issue. Something Neil, 78 Neil as opposed to 92
maybe,
Neil.
Maybe drum technology improved, we don't know.
Maybe the band just improved. I mean, if you're, 14 years later or something, you would hope that you'd improve.
That's what I was going to say, is that it's impressive about Weld, is that they didn't, like, I'm sure if you, like, had a bunch of bands with a, like, Live in Their Heyday album versus Live 14 years later, that you'd expect it kind of to be like, well, I wish I heard them in their heyday, but it's actually, they have honed their craft and their ability to play so well, even better
later on. I also don't think, I think it's hard to define with Neil Young when his heyday was or is.
I guess it's just with these tracks themselves because they're relatively current. But yeah, I guess you have a good point. Like, when is his heyday? And I think a lot of people would want to say like this time, the 70s, late 70s, because he's got all of his bangers, as you call them, written and lined up, but it's
Harvest hasn't come out yet. No, it has.
Needle and Damage Done, it's on there.
What came out in the 90s?
In the 90s?
Yeah, from Neil Young.
Sleeps What's with the, Angels. Mirrorball.
Oh yeah.
American Stars, not American Stars and Bars, Hawks and Doves.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about, okay, so like the songs I really love on here are Sedan Delivery, Powderfinger. I'm not going to clip all these because it's going to take forever.
Harvest Moon, the album, came out in 92.
Yeah, Harvest Moon, yeah.
And that's a fantastic record.
That is, yeah.
With Unknown Legend, Frank From Hank to Hendrix, Harvest Moon. Yeah. So I think if you... that was one of the records I had heard before we even started this podcast.
Oh, we're talking about Heyday. We're talking about when it was his heyday, and you'd say even at that point, maybe that is his heyday.
Even at that point, that record, 92, like, it's fantastic, but he's been doing it for 25, whatever years at that point.
That's true. Oh. Yeah, I guess it is hard. Heydays. Heydays are hard.
Heydays are hard. Do you know about the Star Wars trivia around this tour?
Star Wars trivia?
Yeah.
No, I'm very interested, so I won't talk about I won't talk about the songs I like. Let's just talk about Star Wars instead.
Do you want to talk about the songs you like first?
No, all I was going to say is I really like Sedan Delivery and Powderfinger, which is what I heard them the first time on this album. They're great songs. Okay. And that I love the version of Cortez the Killer on here. Especially with the backup band with the that's amazing. Yeah. And it's got great solos in it. And that's amazing. And then I'll talk to you about Hurricane after. But let's talk about Star Wars first.
Okay, right. So I came across this piece of trivia and it says that you know Star Wars better than I do.
1977. You're a summer of 77.
You're a fan. I'm a fan of Star Wars.
I'm a fan.
Right. The album was recorded during the Russ Never Sleeps tour, famous for its oversized amps and for making the road crew dresses. Is it Jawas in Star Wars?
Yeah, the Jawas, yeah.
Oversized amps and for making the road crew dress as Jawas from Star Wars, right? I was like, what? Like, so I looked them up and those are the guys who wear like the little robes.
And yeah, they're from Tatooine. So they're the ones, if you remember, in A New Hope, which is just originally called Star Wars. They live on the same planet as Luke. And they like to they like to, you know, take things and say stuff like, and that they sell the droids originally to they sell 3PO and R2-D2 to Luke's family. Is that enough details?
More than enough, some would say. But then I was like, I wonder what this is. So I looked into it, and you couldn't really find out much. But I came across this one comment that said, I've been watching the shit out of old Neil Young Crazy Horse videos lately. There's this one show which had a link, but the link doesn't work anymore. There's this one show where they've got fucking Jawas from Star Wars, those little robe shits with the glowy eyes, crawling around behind those retarded prop amps he has. This is really baffling to me. I mean, what the fuck was he doing here? Neil Young, what fucking weirdo. And that's the only bit I found written about it. And I'm just interested to kind of examine what was going on. Why were the road crew dressed as Jawas?
Well, I imagine because it was interesting to do. So often, don't you just put road crews in like all black, for example?
Mm-hmm.
And so would you not consider putting them in like another matching thing like Jawas, like something that would just be in the background you wouldn't pay attention to? And
the way I looked at it was from the perspective of the road crew. You get booked on this Neil Young tour. Mm-hmm. He's been around for a good while now. He's arguably in his heyday. Mm-hmm. And you're going to do this. You're leaving on the day and you speak to your partner. You're like, hey, I'll be back later on tonight. And then you get back from work and you're like, how was your work day? And you're like, it was all good, except when we got there, we were handed these robes. And we were told to dress as Jawas. And like, Jawas? And you're like, you know those little things from Star Wars with the little bug eyes?
Yeah,
let's dress as them. Also, would it match up to health and safety regulations now? Like, would the rope fall in front of your eyes and cause an accident? And you've just got a bunch of injured Jawas on the stage?
I would hope so. I would hope that I don't think the robes are going to be that just, what's it called, hard to deal with. I think that maybe people also like wearing robes, and also it was like, it was a cultural event, right? Like, this is, I imagine, is the tour in 77?
78, right?
Well, the album's 78, but is the tour 77 or 78? Doesn't matter. Anyway.
I think it's 78, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the year after, and they're just super into Star Wars. Maybe there's, like, I bet you road crew people are pretty nerdy anyway. I bet you that's part of what
I mean, that's
doing.
A massive generalization, though. So, and also, just if you're nerdy, doesn't mean that you're into Star Wars. And also, it doesn't mean that you want to dress as a Jawa. I think people have the right to pick and choose when they want to dress as a Jawa or not. And I don't feel like when you go to work, you should be handed a robe. Imagine you turned up to your office after all this. You go back and they're like, cool, Josh, welcome back. Here's your little Jawa robe.
Do you think they have like little glasses they put on to make their eyes super red as well? Like from like the face was all dark and then you just have these glowing red eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure that most of the budget, and that's what you've got to consider, Josh. Someone had to factor in the budget costs for making the entire road crew dressed as Jawas. Mm. Imagine that's your job, costing the price of Jawa robes.
Pretty difficult. Do you think?
And from my experience of looking at roadies, like a lot of them aren't like little people.
Yeah, but they do have these, like, so the Jawas have these, like, belts that they wear, right? Like, that have, like a Wookiee belt, like a Chewbacca wears, where it's got all these little pockets and things in it. Do you think that would be helpful as a roadie to have, like, a sash belt thing with a bunch of, like, different... It's like a fanny pack gone... Sorry, I'm sorry. A bum bag gone to the extreme, where you've got all these different places to keep things, like maybe some wire cutters, maybe some gaffer's tape, maybe an energy
bar. I wonder if that's where they took inspiration from. I wonder if the... road crews going forward for these tours were inspired by the Jawa community to have these utility fanny pack bum bag belts around them to carry all their masking tape and lights and all other different roadie things.
Did you ever do stage crew?
Did I ever do it?
Yeah.
No, and I would be furious if I was told to dress like a Jawa.
I did do stage crew. We did have to wear black sometimes, but I did get to have my own set of keys to the auditorium, which is pretty sweet.
That sounds great, but at the same time, no one was forcing you to wear black.
It's true. It wasn't like Neil Young was demanded. Do you think that they wanted to be Jedi because they thought that was super cool? They wanted to come to work as Jedi, and then Neil was like, I'm sorry, what? No. I am the star. You were Jawa. Do you think that they had to, like, that he made them, like, wander through sand, like there was extra sand backstage, and it was just, he said, to make you feel better, to make you feel at home?
They had to spend half of the day in the desert and then be ushered out onto stage dressed in a robe and carry some giant amps on stage.
Okay, so the giant amps. Talk to me about the giant amps, because you were saying that it's the giant amp tour. Does he have giant amps on the stage, like oversized amps?
Yeah.
Because on the Weld album cover...
Mm-hmm.
The album cover is them playing Crazy Horse, different album again. Crazy Horse is playing, and you can see on the side there's these giant Fender stacks.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing that he's been doing for a long time, or is that just a photoshopped thing, or what's the deal? Are they functional? Is it just supposed to be? Is it a bunch of amps behind there, or just a bunch of like a?
I mean, there's giant Fender logos on them. But I know like bands like Slayer had like the wall of amps that they would have.
Mm-hmm.
Why not have a giant amp?
I guess if you've got that many Jawas to carry it around, it's fine.
Absolutely. That's what the Jawas are there for, to carry your giant amps.
Okay, so here's what we have to end on. I don't know if we have to end, but I got to ask you about, which is the Weld version. Okay, so I listened to Hurricane, which this is like my favorite version of Hurricane forever. The one on this album, on Live Rust.
Yeah.
I loved it. And then I was listening to Yesterday. Let's take a shower, put it on, and I said, play next after this, Weld Hurricane. So I played them back to back. They are very different approaches to the same song.
Mm-hmm.
So Weld, it feels like he's just given little tastes every time, and it feels like he's going to shut it down. He feels like he's going to close the song, and then he's just like, oh, watch me solo a bit. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to end it. Oh, no, I'm not going to end it. Listen to this noodling for a while. And it's just like this constant tease and like give and take back and forth of the song where you think it's going to end and it doesn't, but you're not upset about it. Whereas the Live Rust version feels like it is just one big long version of the song. Like it just swells once, where the Weld one swells and then comes down again and swells and then comes down again.
Well, I agree. I think this record is far tighter than World Live. World Live is, it's great, it's recorded so well, but in parts it feels like a meandering mess where like this is focused and it's like a tight set.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a long set, but it is a tight set. And the thing is, I think it's
just over an hour, isn't it?
I don't know how this stuff works. I don't know how to check those things. You know, I'm a pretty complicated guy.
An hour and 15.
Okay. Hour 15. But even the longest songs aren't like they're still within range for you. Like Cortez the Killer is under 8 minutes.
Well, I mean, Hurricane's 7:48. I think on World it's something like 15 minutes.
15 minutes, yeah. It's 7:48 for Hurricane, and then it's 7:49 for Cortez.
Which is the issue with World, where you kind of lose the focus and kind of lose interest in the songs. You end up going like, I'm just going to skip this bit because this is just like distortion, which is, I think, definitely influenced by Thurston Moore.
Yeah.
Who was a huge fan of, I mean, that, what's the name of the little side record to World?
Arc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just all that, these bits in between where his guitar is kind of feedbacking and stuff. It was just a total mess. And I think that was kind of influenced in the recording of World, where this is much tighter, quicker, more to the point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I was to see this live, I would enjoy this far more than seeing World live.
Oh, interesting.
Because watching a band play a 16-minute song where most of it is just them jamming and guitar feedback,
you can really feel it on your feet.
Yeah, you feel it on your feet. And you know what? If a bunch of Jawas are coming on the stage, I guess you've got that as well. There's no Jawas in 92.
This is, they hadn't had the, they actually just did the re-release around then, just after that, I think, probably. A couple of years later, they did all the re-release in theaters. I saw it in theaters. Anywho, that's a different story about Star Wars.
Star Wars is stupid anyway.
The end of, what I think is interesting here, and I don't know if they did it actually live or if they just did it on the album here in the back half. I don't know, maybe it's a double album because it's probably super long and it was on vinyl. It was probably double. Oh no, you said it's an hour. Maybe it's one album. Whatever. So they have Cortez the Killer as the 12th track, 7:49. And then you have Cinnamon Girl, short, 3:25. And then a longer Hurricane, 7:48. And then a shorter 5-minute Hey Hey My My. And then a longer Tonight's the Night, which is actually a very good version of it, at 7 minutes. But they're still not crazy long, and they're giving you those long bits, but then there's breaks in between where it still feels like there's momentum in the set versus saying, like, we're going to play three songs, all of them 16 minutes. You're going to love them. Watch us jam.
There was versions of this, though, that were edited for release so that they could fit on the record.
Yeah. Is this one of them?
Like, I think Cortez is... It's got a guitar solo missing from it.
Oh, is it like amazing or is it just like a one note solo?
Hey, it could be amazing, but you may never know.
I have to try to write songs in double drop D like Cortez. I'm not very good at it.
I miss drop D.
It's double drop D.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, so you drop the E down to D and then you drop the high E down to
the other
D. So yeah.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So because it sounds less bright. So if you're playing like an E, like the opening chord is a E minor. So you drop the D. So you've got it. You're playing it on the second fret on the sixth string. This is really interesting for people. And then you're playing the rest of the E minor. So it's like second fret, second fret, second fret, open, open, open. But then that last note, instead of being like a higher E, it's a D. It gives it a little bit of a, you know, a sadder vibe to it.
A sadder vibe?
Sadder vibe.
I feel like that's a good way to end it, on a sadder vibe.
Sadder vibe, some rain. Some sad vibes. Get outside, go hiking, people.
Yeah, go and enjoy the outdoors, because we're about to go back into lockdown. And then all you've got to look forward to is us releasing an episode every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks, and it's going to be... we don't even know what's coming up anymore. Should we decide what we're going to do now? Do you want to keep digging back into these things? Do you want me to send you to Journey Through the Past? Literally the album Journey Through the Past, which is a film score.
Yeah, let's do that. But if in the meantime Neil decides to get out on the porch and do a few more songs, then we'll do that instead.
Yeah, anytime he's on the porch, we're there. DH Love. Did you know that the shipping company DHL is actually just a subsidiary of Daryl Hannah's production company.
I think it just ended on there.